Welcome to episode 227 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest inside scoop on everything 5G and quickly becoming 6G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Let's get started with our fifth anniversary episode. Woohoo! Can you believe, man, we've been doing this for 5 years?
Yes, I can, but it doesn't really, I'll be honest. At times it feels like it's been 5 years, and other times it doesn't feel like it's been 5 years. So take your pick, but yeah, it's actually surprising that we've stuck to this as long.
It's been fun, man. So 5 years for 5G and approaching our sixth year for 6G. So we got a little theme here. But hey, man, I'm going to get started with my first topic. I want to talk about Nokia. And I caught this news. It was in early June. They're leading a new drone and robotics consortium in the European Union. It's got a really interesting name, Proactive. It almost sounds like that acne medication. I don't know if that's
why. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, if it's widely distributed in Europe, but it certainly is in the US. But what this is all about, it's a venture that's projected to generate around 90 million euros in revenue by 2035. So it's led by Nokia and 40 some odd other leading European technology companies from 13 countries. And the objective is to redefine how emergency situations and critical infrastructure are managed. So drones are front and center with this. If you're wondering, the project is funded by the European Union's CHIPS joint undertaking. And its stated mission is the project aims to strengthen Europe's technology resilience and leadership in ECS technologies and support the autonomy of the European drone and robotics industry. And hey, you and I have talked on many podcasts about 5G and what that enables from a drone use case perspective. And certainly when you look at robotics and you look at private networks within manufacturing, the ability to be able to move robots around, robotic arms and that sort of thing, and do so via wireless technology is super compelling. So I really like this. Nokia is really moving beyond access. They're focused on government sales. And certainly I would expect that what they're doing with this has a lot of military implications as well. I know you got the news, but what are your thoughts on this?
I think this is very much also an AI play. For sure. Just because so much of robotics and drones is very much around AI, and they also need connectivity. So I think that this is much more Nokia trying to connect the dots.
Yeah.
And I think that moving towards more of a government play makes sense.
Yeah. And Nokia has launched its drone network platform. And so they have a vested interest in driving momentum behind that as well. And a consortium is a great way to do that. That with Open RAN, we've seen that with Open RAN. We're seeing that with the AI Alliance and infusing AI RAN or infusing AI into RAN infrastructure. By the way, I'm going to be posting a LinkedIn short article on some of my insights around AI RAN and NVIDIA, but also some other competitors like Openga that you and I recently spoke with to identify the benefits from a power consumption and a network optimization perspective. But hey, man, with that, let's go to your first topic. And I caught this news as well. And T-Mobile is working with SailGP to innovate with what they do. And SailGP is it's a sailboat racing thing, isn't it?
Yes, it's a sailing competition.
Yeah,
I was actually invited to go last week, but unfortunately, due to my crazy travel schedule, I couldn't make it happen. I'm very jealous. I wish I could have gone, but it's cool because they're really fusing together connectivity and AI. They're using T-Mobile's 5G advanced network solutions to enable much higher definition user experiences and also better broadcasts. So like one of the things that they were talking about is like more cameras for better footage and AI-enabled autonomous buoys with IoT sensors to show real-time speeds. But also, they're doing like predictive AI as well at the edge and transmitting data from the race back to SailGP headquarters in London. And also, they're also hitting new records in terms of what the 5G network can do for broadcast. So previously, they were only getting about 10 to 30 megabits per second, which is only enough for one or two streams of HD, but with T-Mobile's network, they're able to do 16 simultaneous HD streams. Wow. So that's really empowering them to offer more camera angles and enable better user experience and also have better data for the races. So in general, it's just like up-leveling the experience for everyone while producing a more interesting, exciting race. And I believe the next race is in Portsmouth on the 19th of July. So this is like a global race that's just constantly going around, like F1 in a sense. And that's, it's really cool. I wish I could have seen it, but it's like a big deal for sailing.
Yeah, and it demonstrates another fantastic use case for 5G. You can't really string cables over an ocean across sailboats. And these are massive sailboats. And T-Mobile's doing a lot with, we've talked about on prior podcasts, with the PGA and that sort of thing. And if you've ever gone to a professional golfing event, the amount of cables that traditionally get strung all throughout a particular golf course are pretty difficult to manage. And so even golfing, where you don't have some of the same limitations that you would have on a sailboat in the water, really translates to a very, very compelling use case for 5G from my perspective. Boy, I wish I would have gotten that invite, man. I would have stepped up. And
I don't know if you were available. You're also traveling all the time.
Dude, I know. You and I have been traveling like crazy, and that's why we haven't been as consistent as we normally are with these podcasts. But yeah, I'm glad you were able to speak to this use case, because I think it's super, super compelling. But let me hit my second topic. I want to talk about AT&T, and I did share some insights on social media when this broke, but this week AT&T announced that it's halfway to its fiber finish. They've announced that they have reached 30 million locations with its fiber. And that's pretty incredible when you think about what that has the potential to do to bridge the digital divide, what fiber provides with backhaul for mobile services and that sort of thing. And the company's goal, if you haven't been keeping track of this, is to reach 60 million locations by the end of 2030. So they have about 4.5 years to go to double that. But at the pace that they're on, I think they've got a great chance of hitting that goal. And man, this is not a minor undertaking to do this, right? It requires, just number one, a huge upfront investment in capital expenditure. When you look at going in ground, when you look at going aerial in parts of the country that can support that, and then just what it does to, again, unlock the ability to bridge the digital divide. And then again, the other benefit to AT&T is just having that fiber network just provides very robust backhaul for its mobile networks. Any additional things you want to share on that point?
No, I'm very excited to see what AT&T is doing. I think that there's really nobody that comes close in terms of fiber network, both in terms of breadth and capabilities. I have yet to convince myself to upgrade to 5 gigs on AT&T fiber, but it's an option for me. I have to be home long enough to make it worthwhile, because it's a considerable increase in cost, but most CDNs aren't really prepared for it. But even then, AT&T fiber 1 gig symmetrical is a really good product.
Yeah.
And I think they've set the standard for the rest of the industry. And I think there's a lot more opportunities for them to grow. I do think that there should be more opportunities for them, but I think that they're growing at the right rate that's reasonable for them in terms of business. I'm actually a huge proponent of just like fiber everywhere. Like every new building should be fiber. Yeah. We should be retrofitting old buildings with fiber. Because the truth is, I think high bandwidth, high throughput internet enables the next generation economy and education and all of the things that you would need to be an advanced society.
Right.
I think we should be pushing harder than we are, but I commend AT&T for being the one who leads the charge. And I continue to be an AT&T fiber customer and continue to be a happy customer. I'm recording it on this live stream right now. I'm very happy with AT&T fiber, and I think they're offering a great product.
Yeah, congratulations, AT&T. That's a huge milestone, and it just benefits everyone, to your point. But hey, let's go to your second topic. And there are a couple of things that you want to discuss around what NVIDIA is doing. So I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, this is actually like a threefer, but I'm only calling it a twofer. Because at Computex, they started talking about their Arc Compact, which is like their smaller 5G, 6G network offering. That one slid under the radar, didn't quite make the cut. But what the big deal is that at the VivaTech in Paris, NVIDIA also had their GTC Paris, where they talked about their partnerships with European operators, European AI companies, building out a large AI cloud for Europe, and also a continuation of their narrative around sovereign AI. The big push is really they found their edge with operators because these operators are able to build a new modern 5G network, but also add edge AI simultaneously, which as an operator, that's a very enticing proposition. They announced a partnership with Orange through its Cloud Avenue platform. They announced a partnership with FastWeb, which is an Italian language generative AI model trained on DGX supercomputers. There's Telenor, which is expanding its sovereign AI capabilities in Norway with renewable power data centers. And then there's Swisscom, which is rolling out its Gen AI studio and AI work hub on DGX superpods. And then Telefonica, which is piloting its edge AI infrastructure in Spain, enabling privacy-centric low latency services using hundreds of NVIDIA GPUs. So this is like the European look for AI, allowing the Europeans to be more privacy-focused, keep data local, and not really break the laws of the European Union. And there's so many more announcements beyond that, but those are not network-related. There's Bavarian AI Center, Swedish AI Center, Barcelona Supercomputing Center, which is world-renowned, and a Finland AI Center, UK AI Center. So there's all kinds of things going. But in addition to that, they did talk about how they have a lot of 6G research occurring simultaneously, and that they have over 200 companies and universities in more than 30 European countries using their 6G research portfolio to build AI native wireless networks. And they talked about all these different places around Europe, in France and Finland and Germany, mostly universities, but some companies like Rohde & Schwarz was really famous for test equipment. There's just, it's literally too long of a list. NVIDIA has a blog about it, but really what it is about is AI native 6G, both doing research and development, but also like setting standards. And I think NVIDIA is doing a really good job here because I think Europeans feel like they were left, they got behind in 5G. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really good for NVIDIA to see the opportunity to work with the Europeans to prepare for 6G and to enable them to help set the standards, especially when you think about things like AI. And I think it's really exciting because this gives an opportunity for NVIDIA to really solidly place itself as a leader in 6G, especially since even before NVIDIA really pushed AI super hard into telecom, it was already felt that 6G would be AI accelerated. I think that they are the right company to lead the charge. And I think it will be really interesting to see what their competitors are able to do. But I think NVIDIA has done a really good job of thinking ahead. And I do think it will be a real big challenge for Intel to compete with them in 6G.
Yeah, I think you could also draw some parallels to like what others like Nokia and Ericsson and Huawei are doing with infusing AI into their RAN and their core infrastructure and that sort of thing. And this 6G research, this was launched over a year ago, right? And what I like about NVIDIA's approach, the challenge has been traditionally vendor lock-in, right? So traditionally, the Ericssons and Nokias of the world, they would optimize their core and their transport and their RAN around their own ecosystem, right? And then with Open RAN, there began this focus on more openness and programmability. Both Ericsson and Nokia have been driving that. But what I like about NVIDIA's approach is that they're AI native, right? They're interoperable and they're open by design. And so that is all good. But at the same time, there are more companies and infrastructure providers than NVIDIA that are innovating here. But I do believe it's the old adage that I like to quote, competition raises the innovation bar. And certainly what NVIDIA is doing is quite impressive. So I'm glad we're able to actually include the GTC Paris mini recap on this webcast because I think it's important to point out what NVIDIA is doing to drive the innovation line with AI. And they're already doing it with hyperscalers. They're doing it within enterprises. So it just makes natural sense that they would turn their focus to the mobile network operators in that ecosystem. But with that, let me hit my third and final topic. And this is amazing, but I learned recently that New Zealand launched its first private 5G network with Ericsson. And so this is between Spark in Air New Zealand. And what it's focused on is deploying a private 5G network to manage logistics. So basically, it's at Auckland Airport. And what this private 5G network is doing, so this is a nice tie back to my first topic, it's enabling drones and robots to automate warehouse stock takes with real-time data and precision. So what they speak to are a few different use cases. So safer, smarter inventory control. And if you think about the operation of an airport, that's pretty important and mission critical. There are digital twin and computer vision applications that are being deployed as well. And I like it. I think it's a model for other type deployments within places like airports and ports and that sort of thing. What do you think about all that?
I think the first Kiwi private 5G makes sense at an airport. I think all airports should probably have private 5G because data is super important and more data, faster is better. So I think especially for like maintenance and logistics, and maybe one day lost bags will be a thing of the past. Yeah, I'm really curious because we're about to open a new terminal here in San Diego in the next.
Dude, I'm so glad I saw that when I flew out yesterday because, boy, when the older part of the terminal, man, San Diego, you need a facelift.
You flew American, right?
Yeah, I flew Alaska. Yeah, so that was the American terminal.
Oh, yeah, because that terminal, it's the one part of the airport that didn't really get a renew because the west part got refreshed. And the new terminal is getting refreshed, but that part just got a coat of paint and nothing more. So I hope they demolish it someday.
The shared lounge in that terminal reminds me of a Waffle House. I shared that on my X handle last night before I flew out.
But yeah, I do think private 5G is absolutely necessary for ports and airports and anywhere logistics are necessary. And yeah, I'm really surprised it took Zealand this long. Yeah, but, you know, I have nothing else to say.
Yeah, no, I was shocked too. And think about this too. Think about aircraft maintenance and think about the thousands and thousands of parts that are used to make sure that aircraft are maintained properly, that they're safe. And I do want to say one thing. I don't know if you caught the news today with the Air India crash, but my heart goes out to all the families that lost loved ones and, you know, just tragic. I didn't want to bring down the tone of our podcast, but it just demonstrates the importance of this particular application.
I just think there needs to be, because every time a plane flies, it's collecting so much data about itself.
Right.
And that data should be quickly and easily downloaded to a central database and analyzed by AI to identify if anything is out of normal and if there's any kind of anomalies. And that's just that kind of stuff. Obviously, the pilots are checking and there's maintenance staff, but there's going to be things that get caught missed. So it's going to be important for AI to exist to collect all this data and find what data points might be important to discover. Because the truth is, we should be able to discover a potential air disaster before it takes off, not after the black box is recovered. Yeah, I'm really sad to hear about that. And it was really unfortunate news to wake up to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hope that private 5G is an enabler for better aircraft safety.
Yeah, I completely agree. Hey, let's wrap things up with your third and final topic. And you want to talk about the current administration and you've got some news to share around spectrum allocation.
Yes. So it's the one big, beautiful bill.
Is that what it's actually
called? That is the actual name.
It sounds like Trump, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so basically, you know, what happened?
We don't talk politics on our podcast at all.
It's quite obvious what my opinions are, though. The original statement was 600 megahertz of spectrum, including sub 3 gigahertz. But a lot of the military has pushed back on that. So now it's not going to be any of the lower 3 gigahertz. It's going to be above 3 gigahertz, but it will be 800 megahertz, as the current version of the bill says. And the lower 3 gigahertz will actually be allocated for Trump's Golden Dome program that he wants to build, which is an entirely different thing about a domestic missile shield. Of course, it would be called Golden. But the thing is that 600 megahertz would be quite meaningful. I think the big problem here is that they're trying to wind it into the one big, beautiful bill, which has a lot of very controversial aspects to it that will most likely cause it to be killed. But I think that they're doing this because they want the operators to get behind this bill for the reason of the spectrum. And I think it's wrong to connect one gigantic bill to have everything in it, because then it becomes a poison pill, or yeah. some provisions could become poison pills. So I think it's dumb. I think it would be better if this was just its own bill. I don't really have any problems with it if it were on its own, but winding it into this highly politicized bill with lots of very serious cuts to different places and some very odd provisions that I won't mention here that are questionable for our democracy, I think it would be best to be on its own. And that's my critique of the current state of this spectrum segment of the bill.
And it seems this oftentimes, this whole notion of spectrum allocation and whatnot and auctions becomes the political football, right? And I agree with you. We need to divorce the politics from this and do what's right. And getting the right amount of spectrum out to the operators is a good thing. It's a good
also,
thing.
This also would reinstate the FCC's ability to auction spectrum, which still has not been passed by Congress. So
it hasn't been passed yet, which is just so it's bananas. That's, to think about
that. Like the idea that this has to all be wound into some bigger bill just is very frustrating to me. There are better ways to do this.
Yeah, we can do better, Washington. But hey, buddy, it's been another great podcast. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone would like to reach out to us on a specific 5G topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will is at Willtown Tech. Oh, he's over here. Will's at Willtown Tech, and I'm at Anshel Saad. We hope you have a great weekend and a happy Father's Day weekend.
Yes.
And please tune in again next week.